Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's Germination Retail Roundtable webinar. My name is Mark Sinkowitz, and I serve as editor for Germination, and today I'm happy to be your host. Today's theme is Working Together, How a Single National Seed Organization Will Grow Our Industry. We'll hear from three experts who will offer insights on the design of the National Seed Organization and where we go from here. Before we begin, I'd like to thank our sponsors 2020 Seed Labs and CCAN for their support. This webinar is a follow-up to last year's webinar, How Do We Build a Single National Seed Organization? If you're not yet familiar with the concept of the National Seed Organization or NSO, please give that webinar a viewing to bring yourself up to speed. During our presentations, you'll no doubt have some questions for our speakers. As this is an on-demand webinar, we won't be taking live questions. You can email your question to the email address now on your screen. You can also submit your question to us via Twitter and Facebook, or search us on LinkedIn as well. Please tag us in your post and use the hashtag SeedRetail as well. We will be gathering all questions and providing a response online via our website. Our first speaker is Chris Loretto. Chris is a principal at Strategy Corp and leader of the firm's management consulting practice. He specializes in providing clients with advice on public policy development, public-private partnerships, alternative service delivery, strategic and business planning, capital projects and delivery, and stakeholder engagement. Chris will talk about the purpose of the NSO and how it is intended to function. Chris, the floor is yours.
Okay. It's really wonderful to be able to present and provide members of the industry with this briefing on the progress we're making in developing the new seed organization, working closely with the Seed Synergy collaboration partners and their oversight committee to get to this point. And so what I'd like to do today is to take folks through where we're at in the thinking around the design of the new seed organization, and to use this opportunity to also encourage folks to provide feedback to the organizations of which they're members. So this update outlines where we're at and the progress that we've made on what we're calling a target operating model for the new seed organization as of this month, February 2020. And as we present this, no doubt folks will have questions or will want to provide some input. So again, I'm going to encourage them to reach out to members of the oversight committee or to their respective seed organization and provide feedback that way. So I'll take us through the progress and the thinking both on the service delivery model for the new seed organization and also the governance model for the new seed organization. And I'll finish off by talking about next steps in the process, particularly what the ratification process will look like and what the timing is around that. So first, I just want to provide folks with a bit of background on where we've been and how we got to where we are today. As folks no doubt know, the Seed Synergy partners have been working over the last 3 years in getting us to this point. And there have been a number of key milestones along the way to get us to the point where we're actually talking about what a new seed organization can and should look like. And it started all the way back in February 2016, though we understand that the discussions within the industry have been going on longer than that. And we will retain us being Strategy Corp to help think through what the new seed organization should look like. May of last year, when we started our work in earnest with the Oversight Committee, beginning with the annual general meeting in Whistler last July. And so since that time, we've been working quite aggressively to design the new seed organization, to reach out to members of the various organizations and to socialize them to what the thinking is on what that organization can look like. And so We are pleased to be able to provide more detail through this webinar today. So just to go back to first principles, seed synergy is about tackling the challenges facing Canada's seed industry. And the seed synergy white paper identified a number of kind of key challenges facing Canada's seed industry. One was obviously the need to stimulate and further innovation in the sector, and the fear that Canada is falling behind relative to its competitors in an increasingly global marketplace. And so there's the need to drive greater innovation in the industry, and also kind of hand in hand with that is to modernize the seed regulatory framework. And we obviously have a unique opportunity now that the government's undertaking a regulatory modernization process. And so for the industry to be able to come together and participate and influence what that looks like is going to be very important. And that is envisioned to take place in whole or in part through a next generation seed organization, or the NSO as we'll be referring to it, and being able to bring the industry together under one roof, reduce the overlapping memberships and duplication across organizations, and also to create one coherent voice that can go to government on the regulatory modernization opportunities, and also work across the value chain to further drive innovation in the industry to make the overall industry more competitive globally and more successful globally. The white paper identified several potential areas of focus for the NSO and anticipated the benefits of collectively working together through a single organization. And those areas are presented here. Some of these things will be achieved through the creation of the NSO, such as the single window and creating a more efficient, effective industry organizational model. There are other things that will be the responsibility of the NSO once it's up and running to bring the industry together to deliver on areas of focus, including, you know, updating the delivery of novel products regulations and implementing a seed variety use agreement system for IP protected seeds among those opportunities. So the outcomes are really intended to ensure that there's increased investment in the industry, that there's technology adoption, and that makes the industry more competitive, that the services provided to the industry are more efficient and more effective, and that there is a level playing field. So in order to get to a target operating model for the new seed organization, what we did as Strategy Corp as one of the first major pieces of work in our mandate is worked with the Oversight Committee and the Seed Synergy partners to come up with a set of design principles that are rooted in the vision set out in the white paper. And these design principles are intended to guide us in how we're thinking through and ultimately what we're recommending in terms of the design of the NSO. And so there are eight key focus areas or eight key design principles that are set out on this slide. I won't go through each one in detail, but it's fair to say, you know, the first one in terms of making sure that the NSO is a member-driven organization and that we're maintaining broad representation and authority for members is a key design principle. Also ensuring that we're working to eliminate unnecessary duplication and redundancies and creating a single window for the industry to access key regulatory and member-based services. Maintaining and expanding capability to deliver on delegated regulatory authorities. So through regulatory modernization, in discussions with the federal government, we believe a new seed organization will be in a better position to assume greater delegated authorities to advance the industry. And then there's an increased focus and capacity for professional development across the seed sector, whether that's in, you know, specific verticals along the value chain or across the verticals on the value chain. It's one of the things that we've been purposely building into the model, both from the governance side and the service delivery side, is to ensure that there is this capacity to support the professional development needs of the industry. So we've been following a fairly comprehensive process to develop the NSO. We're at the stage where we're refining and kind of finalizing what the target operating model will look like. The next step is, once the target operating model is agreed to by the oversight committee members, is to take that and turn it into a proposal to go to the various memberships of the five organizations that are coming together to amalgamate, and putting that out for ratification and a vote. There will be a ratification package which will include the articles of amalgamation of the five organizations, the founding bylaws of the organization, the business plan for the NSO, and some communications materials, particularly a frequently asked questions package that will be all in the ratification package. The same ratification package will go to the members of each and every organization that is amalgamating. So everybody will see the same materials, and that will be the basis upon which that members will make a decision as to whether or not to support the creation of the NSO or not. And then once assuming a successful vote and ratification, we are going to support the organization in developing a 100-day plan to make sure it gets off on the best possible foot so it's successful. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the service delivery model and the organizational structure that we're thinking for the NSO. As folks may or may not know, the NSO will actually be assuming 36 different services that are currently provided across the five organizations. And so from a service delivery perspective, on day one, it's going to be really important that all the original services that are coming into the organization are kept. And the reason for that is that we want to ensure continuity and uninterrupted flow of service to members and to those who need the services of the NSO over time, as the single window evolves and greater thinking is applied by the governance and the management of the organization. There may be opportunities to integrate some of the 36 services, an opportunity to perhaps retire some of the services, or even an opportunity to create new services. And that's what that's one of the focuses of the new organization that will be important, and trying to drive to an organization that ensures greater ease and simplicity in accessing the wide variety of services that the industry currently relies on. We're also thinking about keeping the organizational design and how it delivers services really clean and simple to understand. So taking a functional group approach to the design of the new organization. So matching activities with like activities that are currently across five organizations, bringing those into one organization. And this is really to make sure that the services can be optimized to drive value for members, and also make it easy for the new organization to understand who does what and how it works within and across each other to deliver those services to members. And then, of course, we're building in professional development, and we'll show you in a minute how we're building that into the structure of the organization. But it's really about increasing opportunities for members, career development, making sure there's programming available that is of value and that achieves that objective. There's obviously going to be a wide range of services, and there's a number of ways to organize functional groups. This is one way of thinking about the functional groupings, and this is illustrative. There are other models. This is going to be advice to the new management and the new board of the NSO. They may design it along these lines. They may adjust it as they see fit based on how they see the organizations. But one way to look at it is that there'll be five divisions of the new organization. The new organization would be led by an executive director. There would be a function focused on the external relations of the NSO, principally around advocacy and stakeholder relations and trade facilitation. There would be a division or section of the organization focused on member and client services. And that's going to be really important, because membership in the new organization is going to be voluntary. And so in order to make it worth everyone's while to become a member of the NSO, it's going to have really good member and client services and programs available. This division will be important. There's obviously the seed certification and the delegated regulatory functions that are essential to the industry. That would be housed in one division of the organization. We would have another division focused in on policy, looking at the future of the industry, and working closely with the external relations team and governance to develop the policy positions of the NSO and where it wants to see the industry go, and advocating for that with stakeholders and government to drive decisions that support those directions. And then there could be a division around systems integration, dealing with kind of the non-seed certification regulatory functions and intellectual property and support for industry members across the value chain. So this is one way to look at it. The form follows function is what's really guiding us here. So we've been taking what is currently in the various organizations and what needs to be in the new organization, and grouping like activities together to create a clean functional model for service delivery. So the NSO design is to be simple and easy for members to access and for staff to deliver. The primary focus of this organization needs to be on its members and the services it delivers to its members, because members don't have to be members. It'll be voluntary. The organizational structure will match the functional model. The NSO, by bringing five organizations together, will be in a better position to recruit and retain professional staff with deep policy, regulatory, and membership experience. And there is also going to be, you know, a focus on transparency and decision making, and, you know, designing a clean organization up front is one way of ensuring that transparency and making sure that the organization is responsive and adaptable to the industry's needs. So next, I'll talk about the governance model for the NSO. And we'll start by actually talking about the membership classes that are anticipated for the NSO. There will be three classes of members. One of those classes will have voting rights. Two will not have voting rights, but they'll have the ability to participate in pretty much everything else that the organization has to offer. So the voting class membership will be the seed industry business class. The first bullet on the slide lays out the precise definition that we're working with for who would qualify as this type of member. Essentially, it boils down to members in this class will be business entities who primarily derive revenue from activities along the seed industry value chain. And it'll be entities as opposed to individuals. Individuals will find themselves in the seed industry professional class. There will be an opportunity for individuals who are active within the industry to become members of the NSO through this membership class. This class will have access to the NSO's service offerings and its programs, and it will also be a talent pool from which the organization can draw for candidates for its various governance positions, be those elected or be those appointed with respect to subcommittees or task forces or working groups that may be established from time to time. And then there will be the seed industry affiliate class, and this will be drawn from members who do not own assets that support the seed industry value chain, but they are engaged in the industry as sponsors, exhibitors, advocacy organizations. These members will also be business entities. So these are the three classes of members. What will happen on day one is that all the existing members of the existing organizations that are coming together through the amalgamation will be grandfathered into one of these classes, and they will be members of the organization on day one. They will stay members for a two-year period, and then that membership will expire, and then members will have to decide whether to re-up as members or to walk away as members. And so that places a tension on the organization to make sure it is serving the interests of members, and that it is giving reasons for members to keep on coming back and paying a membership fee. In terms of the governance approach, we've been working on balancing regional and value chain representation, the policy and regulatory functions that will be coming under one roof in the new organization, and also making sure that we're setting up a board and a governance structure that is focused in and informed by leading or best governance practices, so that it fully delivers on what a modern governance structure needs to deliver on to make an organization successful. So we're looking at an 11-member board of directors, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more depth in a moment, where there will be a seed certification committee that is responsible for the oversight of the delegated regulatory authorities with respect to seed certification. I'll talk about how that will be structured in a second. There will be some key operating committees, some of which are committees that you would see in any organization with a board, such as audit and finance and governance. But we'll also have operating committees around non-seed certification regulatory matters, particularly around quality assurance. There will be a programs and services committee that is responsible for providing governance oversight as the organization thinks through how it optimizes the 36 different services it will have under its umbrella. And there will be a governance committee or a committee of the board around professional development to ensure that that promise of professional development to the industry is being realized and that there's governance support in actually delivering that. And then there will be a public affairs and advocacy committee. This is going to be the committee through which the policy positions of the NSO and of the industry are formulated. And we'll talk about how that is done shortly. The governance structure is designed to be permissive as opposed to prescriptive. And so there is an opportunity to set up subcommittees, working groups, and task forces as they are needed, either by the board or by its key committees. And so the governance apparatus can be ramped up or ramped down depending on the nature of the issues and how intense those issues are that need to be addressed by the industry. So we didn't want to labor the new governance structure with too many required committees in a bylaw so that it can be flexible and nimble and not have to service committees that whose time may have come and just aren't of value anymore, but they're in a bylaw, so they're difficult to get rid of. So the working draft board structure ensures that there are regional voices and that all segments of the value chain are represented. The board of directors will be elected at the NSO AGM and will be elected by members that attend that AGM. There will be seven regional directorships. So those are directors from a region as opposed to their directors who are only there to represent the region. And its particular interests. And then there will be four drawn from the value chain segments as presented on this slide. The inaugural board will serve a three-year term to support the startup and ensure that there's stability in the early years of the NSO with subsequent boards elected for two-year staggered terms. So the inaugural board may begin to turn over after year two of its mandate with half the board coming up for election or re-election. And then the cycle beginning from that point on. The board's focus is going to be more akin to the traditional focus of a board, which is around the strategy of the organization, the operational plans of the organization, and the budgets. So it's going to be a fiduciary decision-making and oversight to a board. Its focus is on being accountable to the members and helping the organization set and stick to its direction, making sure that the organization is compliant with the laws of the land, hiring and overseeing the performance, and in some cases, the firing of the executive director, and providing guidance and forward-thinking advice to the NSO's leadership and management to ensure that it continues to be flexible and nimble and responsive to industry needs. Now, the election of the board will involve essentially a three-step process. The board will strike a nominating committee that will put out an open call for folks to self-identify as candidates for any one of the 11 positions on the board. Those folks that self-identify will identify their region, their experience on the value chain, and their skills, knowledge, and expertise that they would bring to the board. The nominating committee would also proactively search out candidates based on what they see as the skills requirements of the board to make sure the board is delivering on its oversight responsibilities. It'll take the entire pool of candidates. It will vet those candidates to make sure that they are indeed members, they are indeed eligible to stand for office, that they are folks who will be professionals and be able to be effective governors of the organization, and they will put a list of candidates for each of the positions to the floor of the AGM. That list of candidates for each of the positions will be made available 30 days in advance of the AGM. Seed industry business class members will appoint a delegate to attend the AGM, and those delegates will elect the board. Now, what is important to understand is that the value chain positions will be voted on by everybody, regardless of where they're coming from across the country. The regional positions will only be voted on by delegates from that region. So if you're a delegate from Ontario, you will vote for the four value chain positions, and you will also vote for the Ontario candidate. So you will not vote for the Alberta list of candidates. You will vote for the Ontario list of candidates and pick one of them to sit and fill that directorship on the board. The seed certification committee is another essential element of the governance structure. It's designed to ensure that there is an appropriate wall or line between the advocacy side of the house and the regulatory function. We want to ensure that the integrity of the regulatory function of the new organization is supported, and having a seed certification committee oversee that is the way we're going to do it. The committee would be chaired by a director from the board, and then the rest of the members of that committee, which will include regional representatives as well, will be drawn from the membership based on expertise and experience in regulatory matters. The committee members may be nominated by recognized provincial seed associations, and then the board would appoint those recommendations to the seed certification committee. I'll explain that a little bit further in a moment. Representatives from CFIA, Ag and Food Canada, and provincial ministries would be invited as observers. The appeals mechanism of any regulatory decision will fall under the responsibility of this committee. And this committee and the entire regulatory function of the organization will be subject to a third party independent review every 5 years, commissioned by the board of directors to ensure that it's fulfilling its purpose, it's delivering regulatory authorities in an efficient, effective manner, and in a way that maintains the integrity of the intent of regulation, while also not making regulation unnecessarily burdensome on the competitiveness of the industry. The seed certification committee, while it has full control over operational policy decisions, it will be accountable to the board for budget matters, and it will also be accountable to the board where there may be any discussions around assuming additional delegated regulatory responsibilities. So things that may come out of seed modernization, those have to be decisions of the board because they carry financial and other risks to the organization. And so the board needs to be the final decision maker on whether to accept any additional responsibilities and the delivery of those responsibilities. But the seed certification committee will decide without board interference its approach to regulatory standards development and enforcement, the operational policies, the processes and protocols related to existing delegated authorities. The Public Affairs and Advocacy Committee, as I said earlier, will be the forum to bring industry members together from across the value chain to build and strengthen the future of the industry. The mandate is laid out here. Its job is to propose and endorse and oversee federal advocacy positions and make recommendations to the board on what the official position of the NSO should be on policy matters. We're recommending that that any recommendation that goes to the board from this committee around positions the NSO should take should have two-thirds of the voting members of this committee supporting that recommendation as a way of ensuring that positions are in the interest of the broad industry that is represented by the NSO, and that the advocacy and the policy agenda cannot be unduly influenced or favorable to a specific segment of the membership or of the value chain. So this is really to ensure that there are advocacy and policy positions that are in the full interest or general interest of the industry. as I said earlier, there will be an opportunity for provincial seed branches to recommend a candidate from their region to sit on the seed certification committee. And so what the NSO bylaw is going to provide for existing CSGA branches is an ability to enter on a voluntary basis an affiliation arrangement with the new seed organization. So existing CSGA branches will have a time period through which to voluntarily trigger an affiliation arrangement with the NSO as it's set out in the bylaw. And what happens if they trigger that is that in order to cement the affiliation arrangement, a CSGA branch will have to demonstrate that it's amended its bylaw governing membership criteria to open up its membership to organizations and individuals from across the seed industry value chain. So think of it as anybody who could become a member or would be eligible to be a member across those three membership classes of the NSO could also become members of a provincial seed branch. That would have to be something that is done before the affiliation arrangement can be triggered. In addition, the CSGA branch would agree to support the NSO with its member communications and any programming that it wants to bring to members of the NSO within the region. And the branch would also be able to identify candidates for various elected and unelected governance positions like any other member would. It's important to note here that if you decide to be a member of the NSO, you do not have to be a member of a provincial seed branch. Membership is totally voluntary at both levels. But what we want to see happen provincially is that there is a coming together of the industry that mimics what is happening through the NSO nationally. In exchange for opening up the membership and agreeing to support member communications, the NSO would grant a few things to the participating affiliating branches. The first would be that they would confer on them a seed industry business class membership. So the Ontario CSGA branch today, if it opened up its membership under the affiliation agreement, would become a seed industry business class member and would have all the rights that that such a member would have. The NSO would also collect and remit fees for the branches and would agree to appoint their nominee for the regional position on the seed certification committee. The branch will have to demonstrate to the NSO board that it went through, you know, an open and fair nominating vetting process to arrive at their nominee. But as long as they've done that, their nominee will be accepted and appointed by the board to the seed certification committee. Under this the structure, the provincial branches would continue to be independent entities. They would not be branches or extensions of the NSO. They would just have a special relationship, so to speak, under the terms of the bylaw. The right now, the CSGA branches charge a membership fee that CSGA collects and remits back to the branches. That fee would be changed to a service fee on it, charged to anybody who's going through the NSO to get their seed certification certificate. And that fee would then be remitted back to the branch. The branch sets the level of that fee. The NSO simply collects it and remits it back to the branch. Branches would be able to charge their own membership fees. The NSO will have no say in what those fees should be and to whom they should be charged. And voting at the NSO AGM, a branch as a seed industry business class member would be able to send one delegate to the AGM to vote on the board and other matters that come before the AGM, just like anybody else who is a seed industry business class member. They would also, as an industry business class member, be able to put forward names for consideration by nominating committee or the board for any elected or unelected positions within the governance structure, but they would not be given any preference over any other seed industry business class member who also puts forward names. So all of the existing members of the Seed Synergy partner organizations will be grandfathered into the NSO, as I said earlier. The NSO will be governed amongst its membership on a one member, one vote basis. So anybody, any seed industry business class member will have one vote. Even if they have operations in multiple provinces, they will have to pick a home province for their delegate, and that they will only be able to send one delegate and vote for one region. Fees will be grandfathered. So whatever any organization or individual is paying today, that amount will be frozen for the first few years of the NSO, while the NSO figures out how it prices what will be delivered as a service on a fee-for-service basis, and how it prices the services that it's going to deliver to membership and arrives at an appropriate membership fee. The organization will have a minimum of 24 months to figure out that restructured fee and come back to membership with what that looks like. Anybody who isn't grandfathered in as a member when the organization goes live, and they want to become a member, will be vetted by the Governance, HR, and Membership Committee, and a fee will be established by the Board of Directors for that member to pay until the review of the fee structure is completed by the NSO. The NSO will also fulfill current branch the CSGA's current branch responsibilities to the CSGA branches, and that's regardless of whether or not they choose to enter into the affiliation arrangement. But the NSO will collect and distribute those fees for a limited time. They will not do it in perpetuity. So that'll be up to the new NSO board to figure out how long they're willing to honor that if a provincial CSGA branch does not decide to trigger the affiliation arrangement. And so that's the where we're at in terms of the thinking through of the NSO. This final slide just enumerates some of the benefits, most of which I've mentioned throughout my presentation. The next step in this process will be we are working on the ratification packages now, and those ratification packages will begin to be issued to members of all five organizations by mid-April. Members will be able to go through the articles of amalgamation, the founding bylaws of the organization, the business plan for the NSO, and some of the supporting communications information, and use that to ask further questions of their respective organizations, and to use that materials to make a decision on ratifying the move to amalgamate the organizations and create the NSO. So with that, I want to thank you for your time. And if you do have questions or concerns that you want to raise based on this presentation, I would encourage you to reach back to your national organization that you're currently a member of now. We'll be sure to help them in getting you the answers to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. Again, if you have a question for Chris, please email it to us or engage with us on social media and we will get it answered and provide the answer to our listeners. Our next speakers are Todd Hira and Scott Horner. Todd Hira is Western Business Manager for CCAN and also a member of the Seed Synergy Oversight Committee. Scott Horner is General Manager of High Tech Production and has also been involved in recent discussions surrounding the Seed Synergy Collaboration Project. Both will offer their insights on the Seed Synergy Project and the design of the National Seed Organization. Scott, I'd like to start off by providing our listeners with a little bit of background on your involvement with the Seed Synergy Project and the design of the NSO. Can you give us a little recap of that?
Sure, Mark, I can do that. I guess my involvement with the Seed Synergy initiative started I'm going to say, without looking at a calendar, I'm going to say somewhere around, you know, 5 years ago when I was on the board of the Canadian Seed Trade Association, and I guess at that time on the executive. And at that time, there were some, I guess, behind the scenes discussions going on with CSGA executive to start with about, you know, what a national seed organization might look like and, you know, the benefits and the challenges and really just some preliminary discussions around, you know, a potential initiative project and what, you know, a path forward might look like. So it's been, for me, it's been very interesting, very, I guess, in a word, rewarding to see where it is today versus, you know, those initial few conversations. And it's just, it really, you know, blows my mind when I think about the amount of work, the amount of volunteer hours that have gone into getting it from, a conversation over a cocktail at a seed industry meeting to now something that is, you know, very, very, you know, well thought out, very structured, very broad and complex, and so close to being a reality. My company, High Tech Production, is a member of both CSTA and CSGA, and we pay CSI fees for, of course, the facility we operate here and a number of the projects we're involved in. And I've been involved, you know, because of my role here with the company, with the CSTA for many years. And through that, you know, obviously was involved with, you know, CSGA in a number of fronts. I've gotten more involved with CSGA over the last few years after my time with CSTA on the exec. I guess I was asked to, you know, represent Alberta on the national board of CSGA. And so I joined the national board as the Alberta, you know, branch representative in July of 2019. So I've been involved in CSGA meetings both provincially and nationally since then.
And so, Scott, how would this whole national seed organization idea benefit your business?
I see it creating a, you know, a stronger, more efficient, and better aligned seed system for seed grower members like myself and my company. You know, I've been a supporter of the process here. I've been involved for, you know, a number of years at different kind of capacities, but I've been a supporter more recently because I see a great deal to gain for seed growers and seed companies. You know, I really believe we've got an opportunity to take, you know, today what's a good system and evolve it into a great system, you know, that's more robust and better able to deal with the complex, dynamic, and competitive industry that we live in here today. You know, right now, as I said before, you know, my company, we pay fees to, you know, three organizations, three associations, the CSGA, CSTA, and CSI. And, you know, when I think about the administration and efficiency gains, if we only have one membership to pay, you know, one point of contact moving forward versus three, you know, the regulatory advocacy and member services all in one place, it's a great improvement on the use of my limited resources. And, you know, that's something I've recognized over the years being involved in the different associations is the volunteer fatigue that takes place within the associations and, you know, so many meetings to go to and often having the same conversation at around different tables. And if we can, you know, become more aligned and coordinated and, you know, and boil it down to one association, there will be, I believe, great gains for the members. You know, I think one of the big items that's sometimes talked about is the value of the new National Seed Association from the perspective of government. You know, the seed industry is a regulated sector, and the government touches almost everything we do. And they can have a significant influence, you know, both positive and negative over what we do and the outcomes that we have. And, you know, government agencies haven't had the resources to keep up with program demand. They haven't had the resources to invest and evolve to meet changing market demands. And I think, you know, this demand, this situation will only get more challenging over time. And it's one of the reasons why government is looking to offload program delivery and program cost. And, you know, a couple of years ago, alternative service delivery of seed crop inspection is a good example of this. And an industry-wide national seed organization is best positioned to provide a credible and capable option for government to continue to offload program delivery in an effort to make our industry more efficient and responsive. And I think that's really one of the major gains that would come to, you know, my business and other seed growers and other seed companies, is the, you know, the ability for us to influence and take ownership of, you know, program delivery to make it more efficient through a national seed organization.
Todd, I'd like to switch over to you and give our listeners some insights into how long you've been involved with this whole process and in what capacity. Can you give us the 411 on that?
But 2016, I became more involved with the discussions and participating as CSTA, but also as CCAN and wearing my hat from a Western business manager's perspective. And so things kind of ramped up in about 2 years ago when I was appointed to the Oversight Committee as the CSTA representative. And so the Oversight Committee is made up of seven individuals, one from each of the participating organizations plus two from CSGA. And so we're the ones that were tasked with making sure that the process continued to move forward. So that included helping guide the executive directors with their decision-making, providing balance, making sure that things stayed on the rails, and where needed, have discussions as representatives of our organizations outside of staff. And so the last year in particular, we've really ramped up the responsibility of the Oversight Committee as we've hired Strategy Corp to help us move through the portion of the amalgamation process to bring us to ratification this coming July.
Now, when you think of yourself as a member of this industry and your position with CCAN and your efforts on the board of the CSTA, for example, how would this NSO benefit you as a business person, as a member of this industry?
So there's two little pieces to this. So one is the Scott mentioned volunteer fatigue, and so CCAN, not a very large organization in terms of staff. We only have 18 staff nationally, but we are currently have a representative on the board of the CSTA, the board of CPTA, and the board of CSI. And so when you start laying all those pieces on, that has an impact, but that's not really where I like to think about this. So CCAN can do this. We're an association, so we can spend some time to do this, but I'm really like to spend more time thinking about the impact on our individual CCAN members. And from a Western perspective, most of these are family-owned operations, small, medium-sized businesses, and think about the impact for them when they're growers, they're processors, they're retailers, they're touching just about every one of the pieces of the seed synergy process. And for a new person or somebody who's pulled in many directions, having to go to 2, 3, 4 different places to get answers or to move through systems is not the most efficient way. And we have the opportunity here to build something that streamlines the processes for them, allows them to be more nimble, allows them to get the answers they need to keep their businesses on the cutting edge and serving their farmer customers the best possible way.
Scott, I'd like you to chime in here for a moment and tell us, if you can, your favorite part of the whole NSO design. What part of it sort of leaps out for you as the real highlight?
I'm really pretty satisfied with where we've landed from the governance perspective. I know that was one of the biggest questions moving forward, and ensuring that there's fair and equitable representation of the members. And I think we, you know, I think they've landed on that, and I'm happy about that. And I think that, you know, that potentially being one of the stumbling blocks, I don't see that being an issue. I think everybody should be quite comfortable with the kind of representation that's been created for both the you know, the sectors within the group, the segments, and also the regional representation. So that's probably the biggest thing when you review the deck and listen to the questions that, you know, I think they've got right, I'm pretty happy with.
Todd, I understand there were some changes to the design of the board structure. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what changed, why, and how we arrived at the design that we saw earlier in Chris's presentation?
Yeah, it's been a big piece of the discussion over the last, well, probably 2 years now, of getting the governance structure right, because it's the foundation of the organization, and having balance and having the proper skill sets at the table is all part of that discussion. It's important that the new organization is efficient and nimble and able to meet its membership's needs. And there's no one group that can do this all on their own. So the structure that's been proposed, having a board of 11, they are really responsible at the very high level from a fiduciary responsibility, managing the executive director, the real high level discussions. The real work, the expert work that gets done, is going to be at the committee level, and these are where we have the specific interest areas or specific skill sets for by crop type and by portion of the industry, essentially. So having somebody who can specialize in hybrid canola production become parts of those committees is an important piece of this, not having somebody who's a generalist. And so those that understand processing, those that run processing facilities, understand those pieces in detail, those are the ones that need to be at those committees so that they can shape their future and have a voice in their future and make recommendations to the board of directors. And so that's what I like about this, is adding skills where they're needed to round out these portions without putting in a structure that just one size fits all, because it's a complex industry, and having this small nimble board will be an important part of that.
Now I'd like to change the direction of the conversation a bit and talk a little bit about challenges. This is one of the biggest potential changes we've seen in our industry in a very, very long time, and it's not going to be easy. Scott, can you speak a little bit to what you think some of the biggest challenges are with this whole thing, and how we best deal with those?
There are a lot of challenges. Anytime you're bringing five associations together with the kind of history that these associations have and the complexity of their operations, you know, it's going to be challenging, and you know, the oversight committee and strategy corp are doing, I think, their level best to address the challenges. You know, the one challenge that I think we all deal with today in associations, and I don't see it being any different moving forward with the new association, is participation, member participation. You know, Todd spelled it out well. This new CDIT organization is structured with many expert committees that are critical to the functioning and the delivery of the, you know, regulatory responsibility the association will have. And it all depends on engaged and active members. And I think the leadership of the new organization moving forward needs, they will be challenged to find out, to find ways to demonstrate value to members that will motivate members to be engaged and bring their voice and their expertise to the table. So I see that being a challenge that needs to be well managed.
Todd, what for you is the biggest challenge you see coming down the pipe?
I don't know if it's so much about design versus the sense of the unknown or change, having to face change and potential loss of what has been there in the past and not knowing what the future. So it's this uncertainty that I think has a number concerned. I think on the flip side of that, the positives are the opportunities for the industry as a whole are huge. Seed is going to be a driver for the agricultural economy going forward, and we need to make sure that we've structured ourselves so that we're not we've learned from history, but we haven't lost that sense of history in terms of what's worked well for us, but how can we do things better going into the future. And so that's the opportunity of having everybody in the same room, everybody at the table from all aspects working together, talking rather than being in silos or isolation, talking about our own individual problems, talking collectively to make sure that we're moving things forward together for the betterment of the entire industry. Because if one piece is not working, then other pieces are going to fall down. So we need to make sure that we're all on the same page and working together, and keeping the communication lines open as a part of that.
Yeah, Mark, I would just chime in, I guess, and echo Todd's first point regarding the current challenge that is facing the five organizations in communicating effectively to their members. The opportunity that's in front of us and the details of the amalgamation. All of the members within the different organizations have been involved at, kind of differing levels. They receive information, very differently. And I think, we've sat through a number of different member meetings here in the last few months, and it's clear that people have different levels of understanding of the amalgamation and what's involved and the structure and the process moving forward. And I think that sense of change can be a stumbling block for many, and the idea that they're giving up something. And I really see that we're not giving up anything, that we have so much to gain, and that it will be a process, that there will be an evolution here in the coming years of evolving this new organization to serve the needs. But today, you're right, the challenge is communicating effectively all of the elements that need to be taken into consideration prior to the ratification vote.
Speaking of ratification, Todd, what can we expect now? Where do we go from here in terms of actually voting on the NSO proposal?
We've just really finalized in the last few weeks the presentation that that Strategy Corp has been rolling out, and in general, the response has been good. So this has allowed us to move forward to pulling together ratification packages. And this includes pro forma financials. So for the first time, pulling together the financial expectations for the new seed organization. And these are very high level documents, but just include the simple things of what does it mean to, what kind of savings can be brought by bringing five entities into one. And so those are positive returns from those. And so those will be part of the package. New bylaws for the new organization will be part of it. A Q&A in terms of how, giving a deeper understanding of how the organization will function beyond the slide deck that we've been seeing. So those are all parts of the package. And the goal is to have those out by before the end of April, so that each of the organization's memberships can have plenty of time to review them before they're voting on them. And so get the packages into place. I believe CSAC's meeting is first, which is at the end of May. CSGA, CSTA, CPTA will all be in July during their AGMs. And so getting that information out in front of everybody, being able to explain it, absorb it, and think about it, and then come together to have those votes in July of 2020.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for your time today. Before we sign off, Scott, any last words?
There are individuals who maybe haven't been quite as close to the process and, are asking really good questions about, the whys and the hows moving forward. And, there is a skeptical group, I think, who maybe are having a more challenging time seeing the value of what's being developed. And I guess I would just encourage those individuals to, get involved. that's one thing I've recognized here. It's been a volunteer-driven process, and the process is very open to feedback and to hearing people's concerns and questions and answering those questions. And so there's been an amazing amount of work going into building this initial structure. But moving forward, there will be an opportunity to make adjustments after the amalgamation takes place, and people need to be involved and be active in helping support that. And the other thing, I guess, just to make mention of that, the Oversight Committee has been responsible for directing Strategy Corp, and they've really done all the heavy lifting and discussing and negotiating between themselves about structure and what can be effective, what the concerns are. And I've just got an amazing amount of respect for that Oversight Committee, and it's the people on that committee are well known to the industry. Their names haven't been presented, but it's Chris Churko, who runs a seed company who's owned by seed growers. It's Dave Hansen, who also runs a seed company that's owned by seed growers, and he's been active in the CSTA, and he's on the board of CropLife. And it's Todd Hira here on this webinar. His career and his business is dependent on seed growers. He's the past president of CSTA, and he's active with CPTA. You've got Roy Klim and Jonathan Nybor, also really long time active CSGA members. Jonathan's the current president of CSGA. You've got Claude Lapointe, who's had a long history and career with Co-op Fédéré and Seed, and they're active across the country. And last but not least, you've got Morgan Webb, and his business is 100% dependent on seed growers and a strong and healthy seed industry. So I've got full confidence in the work that those individuals have done, and that they've got the best interests of the seed industry, whether it's seed grower or seed company, at heart. And, again, just so impressed with the work that's been done, and I'm really, really quite satisfied with the position we're in. And, we owe it to, that committee of experts for where we've gotten to today.
Todd, any closing remarks?
Being able to work with a group that has at times some very different views, but really keep the discussion going and keep moving forward for the betterment of the industry has been a really positive piece of this. And the Oversight Committee has done a lot of work, but I would also want to give a ton of credit to the staff, the executive directors and their appointed staff that have at times pulled together tons of documents and kept this process going on in the background. And so there's been a lot of hands in this one to keep it moving. And it's really been a labor of love for many, because they're believers. They're believers in the system. They love the industry that they have now, and they all want to see it better. And that's what's been the interesting piece, is everybody's heart is in the right place, moving it forward for the right reasons for the future. And so we're not talking about 5 and 10 years. We're looking 20, 30 years and positioning ourselves as a Canadian seed industry to make sure that we're viable and strong for the next generation.
Well, that is all the time we have today. Thank you so much, Scott and Todd and Chris, for your presentations. And thank you for listening to our webinar today. I'd like to take one more opportunity to thank our sponsors, 2020 Seed Labs and CCAN, for their support. Again, if you have a question, please email it to us, or you can send it to us through social media, and we will get an answer to your question and provide the answers online very soon. Thanks again, and have a great day.